big shout out goes to Maxxis Tires, Jensen USA, and Fox Shocks for supporting the Inside Line. Welcome, mountain bikers.
Dude, yeah, Aaron, thanks so much for being on. How's your workout?
The workout was good. It was. It's nice to be working out with a little less pain on the old elbow recently. So
nice.
Yeah, finally making some progress. So thanks for waiting up for me.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, I want to talk to you about the injury here in a little bit. But before we go too far, and this is probably the most important question, so I'll start with it first. If you're with Crestline and you come out with a new bike model and you call it the Trinidad, do I get some royalties on that?
The Trinidad. Yeah, I know. Local joke there. For sure. Yeah, I know that would be funny.
All right.
That's what everybody knows that as now. If you know, you know.
If you know, you know. That's right. And now we're telling everyone. So, all right. The news is out. It's been out for a week or so that you, Gwyn Racing, your team, you're riding Crestline bikes. Now that a week or so is behind you, are there any misconceptions or things floating around that need clearing up, you know, since you first made the news public?
I don't know. Nothing crazy that sticks out to me. Okay. I don't think. I think a lot of people thought that I had ownership in Intense. That was one, and I never did. We talked about it early on when I first signed with Intense. It was potentially going to be part of our deal.
Okay.
But we kind of just decided, you know, at that stage in my career with where I was and with where they were, it was like, I was kind of like, let's just focus on trying to win races and get this bike where we want to be. And, you know, for me, I was still, you know, when I first signed with Intense, it was, you know, I was like the guy at that time still, you know, I had an injury the year before, but it was like just championship mode. So I was like, let's just give it a couple years. And if there's an opportunity to partner on the business side down the road, we can re-explore it then. So, okay. Yeah, but I did know the owners well, and with like Dungy and some of those other guys that were invested, hanging out with them. I don't know, that rumor went around, but yeah, I never had any ownership there. And then, I didn't buy into Crestline either. I've seen a few people thinking like, oh, he just spent a bunch of money to buy in. So there wasn't any money involved. My ownership in the brand will just come as we hit certain markers with sales and stuff. But it's basically there, just because of the value I provide as, you know, a brand ambassador and the feedback and all the things that I kind of can bring to the brand, moving forward in my involvement there. So that's there for. But yeah, outside of those two things, I think, not much, man. I've been pretty transparent about everything.
Okay, cool. Those are some of the things I had down, was like, people thought you were part owner of Intense, but you're not. And then, yeah, just kind of how it works that you have ownership. Like, is, and you know, if this is too personal, fine. Like, you can tell me to beat it. But like, is any of your personal money going into funding the team, or does that all come out of Crestline, you know?
So there's a lot of different things with the team. I will be personally funding a section of the team this year, or a portion, okay. I should say. I didn't want to wait for everything to finalize before we decided, you know, like for example, with Seth and Mikey, the other two riders on the team, I didn't want them to have to wait, you know, deep into the off season and be like, hey, you guys are on the team if I can find the funding, and if you're not, if I can't, kind of thing. So, I committed, you know, once I had an idea of, we were going to be pretty close as far as getting the budget to run the program. And so I was like, okay, whatever's left, I'm willing to throw a bit in just to make it work, so we can kind of, you know, give these guys a ride, make sure that we're functioning as a program, start booking hotels. Cause a lot of this stuff had to happen, you know, months ago, as far as like, if you're going to go to the races, you really need to be locking stuff in, you know, sooner than now. So, yeah, so it'll be kind of a group effort. I'm putting in a little bit, but mostly it will be sponsor funded. Okay. Between Crestline and all of our co-sponsors as well.
It's good to know. And to dispel a myth, was it wasn't to be dramatic that you waited so long to announce the news?
No, for sure not. No. Yeah, it was funny because it was like, it seemed like I was the last one to hold out on the news, but we were, I was just really patient with putting this deal together with Crestline. Like, I was, and we'll dig into the details of how everything came together, I'm sure, but long story short, I was just in the fortunate position. I didn't need to rush to like just to make something happen. Like I said, we committed to our guys on the team and knew we would have a functioning program months ago. And we had the base of all of our sponsors locked in. The Frame brand was the last one to kind of figure out. And because I was kind of hoping for something unique like this, these deals don't, you know, it's not just like, hey, we'll pay you this much if you go race. Like this was a way more, you know, if you're talking about having a third ownership of a brand or equal parts ownership, there's a lot of things that need to be sorted through there to make sure everybody's aligned and on the same page. So that just took a little bit of time. We still actually did it relatively like, you know, it didn't take a lot of time, all things considered. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we were just patient about doing it. So I wasn't trying to hold off for the announcement. It was just, okay. You know, we were slowly putting the pieces in place. And then once everything was done, then I was like, we'll just announce it then.
All right. First of all, how do you manage to keep it secret? Because it seems like nothing like this. There are so many people, especially like some insiders that are just like, whoa, didn't see that one coming. So like you did a pretty good job keeping it on lockdown.
Totally. Yeah, we were really quiet about this one. I think a lot of that happened because, you know, a lot of times if you're signing with a traditional brand, you know, like Intense or Specialized or something like that, a lot of times there's other brands kind of involved, you know, like for example, E13 or TRP or some of the component brands would be like, okay, who's the brand you're rotting for? And sometimes there's a bit of leverage and like, okay, we'll pay the team a little bit more for budget if you guys will stock this on the OE side or whatever. So there's just a lot more people that you usually need to know before a deal is finalized. Mm-hmm. But since I'm, you know, I'm continuing to run my program, the Intense program was mine, but it wasn't run under my umbrella. It was run under Intense's. So it was like with Gwyn Racing, when I decided just to do it myself and I knew that I would fund whatever, if there was a, you know, a budget amount remaining that we needed to fill that we could do it. I was just like, okay, I'm doing this regardless of whether, you know, who's going to help me or not, basically, like we're all in on this. So, I didn't really need to tell very many people and I honestly just wanted to figure out what was best, and keep it really tight. So even some of my sponsors, you know, not everybody even knew before I announced it. Like it was kind of, I just wanted to get the deal done and it wasn't cause I was trying to be secretive or anything. It was just, we were in business.
Protects what you're doing, right?
Yeah, exactly. We wanted to make sure everything was really done right. So, and thankfully I've got such good supporters, you know, they were stoked with whatever I did. So, yeah, honestly, dude, there was just only a handful of people that actually knew about it.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. All right. As of a week or so or launch, at least like you hadn't ridden the bike yet. Has that changed?
No, I still haven't ridden it. Okay. My race frame actually just got sent out a few days ago, so it should be at the Knoxville house built up now. So I'll be back at Windrock on Monday and I will probably jump on that thing next week. I'm still kind of, I just started rotting about 2 weeks ago, like real easy on a trail bike with my elbow. And it's finally, I feel like I can ride and I'm not having a lot of pain. I've obviously got to take it easy. But just been really easing into things. So yeah, plan is to get back on the downhill bike, next week, but I've still got probably a couple of months before I can ride, you know, really hard and not have anything kind of flare up again. So, yeah, just having to be very patient. So the boys spent, a lot of time on the bike last week. Seth and Mikey both flew out from BC and spent the week at Windrock with us. And we did a lot of baseline testing with them and got them set up and they were super happy. Which was good. And then I'll kind of start my road back here shortly.
We'll dig into the injury a little bit, but, like you haven't really talked much about the tire switch yet, have you?
Yeah, we haven't really talked about it much. Just so
you're going from V to now E13, but can you, you know, discuss what that entails and how it's kind of not that different?
Yeah. So, the E13 thing on the tires, I mean, I've been with E13 for, man, I don't know, since 2016 or something, I think. Like, I've been on E13 a lot longer than that with the chain guides, but we've been on the wheels and we were on cranks for a long time and cassettes and all that kind of stuff. Now we've switched over to TRP on a few things, but I've been with E13 forever. And E13 tires are actually made by V. V basically, like if you're familiar with Maxxis, I think all their stuff's made at a factory called CST, I believe. There's only really a couple of big tire factories that basically make everybody's tires. So E13 tires are made at V. So yeah, we were on V the last couple of years. And we made some really good progress with those tires. The casing and the compound on those tires were amazing, like the best I've ever had. They were really good with where we got. Like I was able to run less pressure, and pretty much like when we had the finalized casings, like they're just really durable. They felt really good. I didn't need to run inserts or anything like that. Like we were really happy with those, but we struggled a little bit with really getting the tread patterns right. You know, the spacing of the knobs and the height of the knobs and all that kind of stuff. There was just a lot of back and forth. And so, anyways, it kind of worked out well because I already have such a good relationship with E13. V makes E13 tires. So it was kind of like the deal that just made sense for V and for E13. Like I still have a great relationship with the guys at V. I'll still be talking to them a lot as we develop tires in the future for E13. But I felt like the team at E13 with Joel and those guys, like the tires that they already have right now, the tire patterns are really good, and we're already working on some new ones. And I knew that I would have the casing and the compound that I had at V on these new tires. So for me, it was kind of the best of both worlds. So, dude, I'm really excited about these tires. I think we could like have an advantage on tires, like not just try to be breaking even with everybody. So I'm stoked.
Do you remember the day when you realized you weren't going to be riding the Intense anymore and that you had to give up on another design you've been working on for a while and move on to something else? Like, was that a clear day where you're just like, nope, all this work and now I'm going somewhere else?
Yeah, I don't remember what day it is, but I remember the phone call. And I was just like, it's tough, right? It wasn't just tough for me. It was tough for Intense. Like nobody sure. wanted that relationship to end. They were just as bummed as I was. You know, we put in a lot of work and time and money the last 5 years with the race program, you know, and we went through a lot together from COVID to injuries to, you know, the big ups and downs swings of the bike market the last 5 years. So, and I'm still tight with all those guys over there. You know, my mechanic, John, that I've been with forever, he yeah. still works there until I can convince him to move to Tennessee. And I still got a lot of friends there. So it was, you know, it wasn't what any of us wanted, but just the situation, it just was what it was. You know, there wasn't an opportunity to stay there. So, yeah, it was definitely a bummer. It was hard because we, you know, we spent a lot of years working on the bike and getting things right. And I feel like we were finally there this year where I felt like Dakota and myself were like legit, you know, winning. We're capable of winning World Cups at the same time, like two winning riders on a team if we had the right, you know, if a day went really good. And then obviously I got hurt. Dakota had a really good season and it felt like, all right, we're here now. And, you know, a lot of our other parts and things were coming around. So it was definitely hard to have to end that after all the years of hard work. But dude, that's life and that's the industry sometimes, you know?
So, yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely a bummer. But you know, I wish them nothing but the best and I know that they'll, you know, they're supporting me the same way. So it was like, all right, time to figure it out again.
Yeah. Like how did that process start? Did you have a short list of, you know, bikes you wanted to try or like, did you have any plan at all?
Yeah, kind of. I think we were discussing some other business things with Intense towards the end of the contract. Because what I've always wanted is to either start my own bike brand or to be a part of a bike brand at a bigger level. You know, I've been fortunate to be a part of so many great brands and see how, you know, things go and been able to learn a lot with each brand I've ridden for. And I just, like I love riding my bike so much and everything about it. And I've put in so much work, I feel like, for a lot of brands and they put in a lot of work for me as well. But you know, you kind of get to a point where you're like, man, it would be awesome to have a part of this, like to be able to work on something that, you know, you don't need to renegotiate every 2 years and be able to see it through long-term. So that's really what I was, I was hoping for, you know, with this contract, regardless of whether I stayed with an Intense or not. And so, you know, that those opportunities aren't obviously available with certain big brands. You know, you're not going to come into a Specialized or a Trek and they're going to give you a third of their company. It's like they're going to be traditional style sponsorships. Yeah. And I think for me, the way I've approached this next phase of partnerships is more in like a strategic partnership type of model rather than a traditional sponsorship type of model. You know, I'm again just fortunate to be in the position I am right now where I don't need to kind of say, hey, will you guys sponsor me so that I can go do this? It's like, hey, I'm gonna go do this. If we're aligned and you want to be a part of it and it makes sense for everybody, then let's have that discussion. You know what I mean? So I think for me, like I was really looking for some more longer term partnerships. I've got a lot of business projects and things that we're working on right now. And so having good brand alignment long-term was more important than anything. So that's kind of what I was looking for. And that's why, you know, it just took a little longer than maybe other deals would take. Cause it, you know, I would like to not have to do this again in 2 years if possible. And yeah. So, yeah, fortunately I feel like I found the perfect fit. So it worked out good in the end.
Cool. Did you go to any of those big brands and kind of pitch, you know, what you're thinking, or did you just avoid that and go to, you know, the size of a brand that might have something like this work out?
Yeah, I chatted with a lot of brands. I mean, I'm still tight with, you know, I'm still pretty close with all the brands I've ridden for in the past for the most part. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of the owners of those companies too, like on a, you know, I can just send them a text anytime. And oftentimes, like I still do chat with some of those brand owners, you know, like once a year or something just to say, hey, cause we're still buddies. So yeah, I mean, I did kind of talk around to a lot of people. Cause like I said, we have some different business things, some that people already know about and some that haven't been announced yet, that we'll be chatting about here in the next couple of months. And so it was like really just trying to find the right fit. You know what I mean? Like, hey, like here's kind of what I'm thinking. This is what I want to do in the future. And just kind of like, just trying to see if there was good alignment more than anything. So, I chatted with quite a few brands. And there was a few brands where we were pretty far down the road of kind of talking to, just kind of was slowly figuring things out. So that's kind of how it came together. But yeah, it was good. I guess we'll just say like, I'm really happy with where I landed, the way it all came together. And, you know, when you talk to a lot of people and some brands are strong here and they want to support this, but they don't really want to support this or whatever. Like when I started talking with Troy and at Crestline, it was like, this is what we've been looking for. Like they really believed in the overall vision. And I feel like we have very much the same vision on a lot of things we want to do. So it was, it worked out really well.
Okay. If you were going to make a Crestline bike tomorrow, you have carte blanche to do whatever you want, what bike would you make?
First, I'd probably make more downhill bikes. Okay. Because I love downhill bikes. They actually, the last run of downhill bikes, they only made, I think 50 of them, plus obviously like warranties and spares and stuff.
Yep.
So the race team has enough bikes to get through. And the plan is to obviously do some good testing on this bike and kind of see how it goes. I think we're, as far as kinematically and a lot of things, I think we're going to be able to get it pretty close on paper to what I've been used to the last year or two.
Yep.
But obviously like we're kind of in a cool position where we're going to need to make another mold with Crestline here in the next 6 months or a year. Mm. So if we're going to make changes, like it's the perfect time to do that. So we'll just kind of see, how it goes. But yeah, the plan is definitely to keep the downhill bike going, get some new molds on those and, keep ripping on those. But, I mean, they got a pretty awesome e-bike right now. And I think the next step logically would probably be some type of a trail bike. So, okay. We're kind of having those conversations now and figuring out kind of, you know, what's the priority, where do we want to go. The cool thing with Crestline is the business model and just kind of the way they look at things is a little different than I feel like a lot of companies. The goal is not just to sell as absolute many bikes as possible and just more. It's like whatever we do, we just want it to be really quality. We want to really believe in it and do it right and have like the best customer service and, you know, really have things dialed in. So it's definitely more of a quality over quantity type of thing. So if we, you know, when we start to add these other bikes to the range, they'll be very well thought out. And we're just kind of fortunately in the position where we don't feel like we need to rush it. You know, we just do what's going to make sense. But at the same time, lots of expansion plans in the future for sure.
Do you know, does Crestline use, like, it's my understanding that you can cut kind of like a short production run mold out of aluminum versus like an expensive one out of steel. Is that what you guys would plan on doing, is just going kind of more short run to start?
I think with the numbers we're going to be doing now, I think we'll have to switch more into these permanent molds.
Okay.
The downhill bike was a prototype mold. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the material is a little different. You can get them done a little bit quicker. I think that's what really drove that decision too, is like when the downhill bike, I believe, was the first bike that Crestline made.
Yep.
And it was like during COVID when every bike manufacturer, you know, every frame company or whatever, the companies that build the frames, they were like wide open trying to make as many bikes as possible. So trying to get in line, I think the lead time was just a lot shorter on the prototype frame. And obviously it was their first frame, so they were like, cool, let's just launch with 50 like super sick limited frames and see how it goes. So that's what they did, and they all sold out. But yeah, from here moving forward, the numbers that they're doing now and what we're forecasting and what we want to do, it'll be worth just going ahead and like doing a proper mold.
Okay.
That you can keep, you know, for a couple of years.
Yep. Cool. So, you know, you talked about like, you think you can get the bike pretty close on paper, like obviously since you haven't ridden it, but how important do you feel a suspension platform like, you know, VPP or Horst or whatever, how important do you think that is compared to getting the kinematics you want? Because, I mean, you've kind of ridden almost everything over the course of the years, you know, like, do you feel like any design you can pull it off if you get the numbers right?
Yeah, I think so. I think the numbers are far more important than the suspension platform, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like I would definitely rather have numbers that are like the same than a suspension platform with numbers that are jacked up. But yeah, I mean, I'm kind of curious, you know, honestly, like just to be completely honest, like we never really got that intense with the VPP where we wanted it, but we didn't have, there was a certain way of thinking that came with that bike at Intense that I struggled with, you know, like with what I want in a bike versus I think what Intense was used to sort of doing with bikes that was harder than the actual suspension platform itself. So what we learned through the process of going to that 4-bar bike that I did really well on, and then ultimately to this like 6-bar bike that they have now and where we landed, I learned a lot in that process with the engineer we had hired that I feel like if I would have had that on the VPP bike before, I think it would have been very interesting to give it a shot. You know what I mean? I think at the time it was kind of like, well, I know that this works. And if we're just trying to get there as quick as possible, like, you know, and Jeff had this idea for the 6-bar bike years ago to try to get all the numbers to line up right. And then when we hired Devin on, he really filled in a lot of the gaps for me. So yeah, we'll see. Devin and I are still super tight. And he's, you know, helping me along with Jimmy at Cascade Components. Like we got a good crew now working on this new bike. So yeah, our goal to start out with this race bike, thankfully, like with the VPP between the upper and the lower link and the rear dropouts, you can change a lot of things kinematically with those 3 points. So our goal is to basically get the numbers, which they're already decently close in ways, you know, like start to do some testing and just refine this thing as close as we can get it. There are some advantages, I feel like, with this bike over the Intense bike that we had. So I would really like to keep those advantages. And then,
you know, we'll see what those are.
Yeah, like right now the bike, the way it corners, even the way it pumps and like gets up to speed is like really good. It's a really snappy bike. That Intense bike was definitely, it was pretty agile, but it was definitely still a bit of a plow bike, like pretty stuck to the ground. And it was, you know, especially on that 4-bar bike, something we struggled with, you know, time wise on the clock. I knew we were giving away time because if you could point the thing straight down and smash through bumps, it was amazing. But if you're trying to like carry speed on flat straightaways and accelerate it. It was heavy. Mm-hmm. This Crestline bike is almost 5 pounds lighter than my Intense race bike was, wow. which is a massive. Yeah.
That's so a lot.
Yeah. So the Crestline right now, fully built up with aluminum bars, aluminum cranks, has carbon wheels, pretty heavy tires, because that's kind of what I'm preferring right now, because you don't have to run inserts and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And a coil shock is just barely over 38 pounds.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah. So if we put like carbon bars and carbon cranks and air, like, dude, you give a 36 pound bike, and it's not a small bike. Like it's,
yeah,
you know, it's got a 480 reach on it, okay. I think stock. So it's not small.
Yep.
So it's super light. It's really well built. It's really smooth. Like the way the bike went together and everything, like, dude, the Crestline bikes are really nice. Like we built it up and I was like, wow, like, that's probably the nicest bike I've ever seen. Like they're sick. So yeah, I mean, the bike is way lighter. My Intense race bike, we were weighing it up. It was a prototype, right? And it was maybe a little overbuilt in a couple of ways just because it was a prototype. But that bike was like almost 43 pounds. So it was pretty heavy.
It's a big boy.
So yeah, so that's cool. Yeah, some of the kinematics on the bike, just, and I'm just kind of going off of Seth's feedback on what he was telling me, because I obviously haven't ridden it, but he really liked how the bike cornered, how playful it was. It was a lot easier to get the thing to like move around on the trail and be a little bit more lively. And he still felt like it was really good in the big bumps. So yeah, I'd like to keep a bike that's a little snappier and then kind of work in some of the other strengths we found to be good at the same time. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, we're not stuck to this suspension design, but obviously, I'm pretty confident we're going to be able to make it work with the people we have now. And if we can, then that would be the goal, is to keep it as is.
Okay. You know, kind of diving into kinematics and, you know, how you want your suspension to feel and stuff, like, you used to be the firm guy, you know, like, whoa, you can't even squish Aaron's fork, that guy. That's changed over the years. But like, where do you feel like you are now? And I know it's been pushing a year since you've, you know, you've raced, yeah. but like how have things changed for you?
Yeah, for me, I think I was chatting about this recently, but the bikes have gotten so much better and so many things have changed. I mean, like the wheel size alone, from a 26 inch front wheel to a 29 inch front wheel, like you can just smash into stuff with that bigger wheel so much better than you could with a 26 inch front wheel. So between the wheel sizes changing, the bikes have gotten a bigger reach wise in the last 10 years. Your bars have gotten wider, like your brakes are better, your tires are better, the suspension is way better than it used to be. So with all of those improvements, obviously I feel like we're going faster now and we're hitting stuff even harder because the bikes are better. But because of the tunability and the improvements in the equipment, you don't have to run a bike so stiff anymore just to get it to hold up. I felt like back, like when I was on track, for example, when I ran my stuff really stiff, you had to make a decision, sort of like either you wanted your bike to work in the small bumps and like have good feel and track the ground good, but it wasn't going to hold up in the big hits, or you're just going to like lock that thing out like I did and just make sure you could smash into the biggest stuff possible without slowing down, and then just be strong enough and sort of skilled enough to like hold it on the track and in all the other areas. Yep. But now just the suspension alone, like, I mean, you can kind of have both, you know, they have really good small bump compliance, good mid stroke support, and can really smash a big G out hard. So, yeah, the improvements in the equipment have allowed me to run a more reasonable setup. I think as I get up to race pressures and race speed, I still lean on the stiffer side than most riders probably. But it's not like it's ridiculous. You know, the bike doesn't feel horrible if you want to go ride it in the bike park or something. Like it's reasonable.
All right. It was basically a year ago to the day almost that we're down in Laguna and we had John Hall over for our ride along podcast. And we went down the wheel tuning spoke tension rabbit hole with him. And he had some pretty interesting things to say. Like, is there any development on that end with what you're doing? Are you still messing with spoke tension and, you know, things like that? And again, I know you've been sidelined for a bit, but you know, you've got Seth, you've got the other riders, like you were working with Daxta last year. So Is that still something you're going to mess with?
Yeah, for sure. I think, I can't say too much because we're working on a few new things I can't talk about yet, but yes, we're looking to get good compliance out of the wheels, spokes, and hubs.
Okay.
The E13 stuff that I've raced and ridden forever, the LG1 carbon stuff, I believe they're called the Grappler race wheels now. They've gone through a couple of new iterations, and those things are like so bulletproof, like for us, they've been so good for a World Cup carbon wheel. But they are a little bit on the stiffer side. So we've messed with some tension stuff. I know Dakota dug into it a little bit this last year. And we have some new stuff we're working on now that really adds a lot more compliance into the wheel setup. So yeah, that's somewhere we're going. But I think when we get some of these new things, we're not really going to be messing with tension a lot. It's just the overall package is going to be kind of what we're looking for.
Okay, cool. Good to know. Do you know who your mechanic will be this year?
Yeah, James McAllister. He was actually on our program last year. He was Dakota's mechanic last year.
Okay.
So yeah, James is awesome. He's been on our program now basically since Dakota got on the program. So he was with us for 2 years. Super awesome dude. We've grown to be really close with him. So when Dakota changed teams, he didn't have the opportunity to take James. They had a mechanic, I believe, over in Spain or something, a race mechanic that he is going to use. And I didn't have the opportunity to keep John because he's got a good gig going at Intense right now. And, you know, like with us living in Tennessee now and him being in California, like I tried hard to convince him to move out here. And I'm still trying, and they're considering it. They have some family stuff that doesn't allow them to get out of California right now.
Sure.
But yeah, so James will be my mechanic moving forward for this year. He's also, we have two mechanics, basically him and Matteo is a new guy that we just hired out of Italy that a lot of people are probably familiar with. He used to work for Jerome Clements.
Okay.
Cool. And some of those guys. So, I met him briefly in France last year. Seems like a really cool, positive guy. He's been awesome to communicate with, so far. So they'll be the two mechanics. So James will kind of, I think I'll probably miss the first couple of World Cups. I think. And so if that happens, you know, Mikey and Seth will basically each have one of the mechanics. And then when I come back, James will primarily work on my stuff and then Mateo will work on the boys' stuff.
You and Dak are obviously in the same area. Like, are you riding with him? Do you think you'll ride with him at the World Cups to train? You just going to do your own thing? Like,
no, we for sure will still be riding and hanging a lot. We still go get dinner with him and Frida when we're back in Windrock. Like, he's been just about as busy as I've been.
Yeah.
But I still see him when we're both home at least once a week when we're around. So yeah, Dakota and I are still definitely really tight. We still chat quite a bit on the phone and in person at the bike park. And when I'm back on the bike, yeah, we'll train together and ride together. And I'll imagine we had a really good thing going at the World Cups, like practicing and everything together. Yeah. So I imagine we'll be on a similar program. Same with Seth, my other teammate. So yeah, all is good there. I know we both wanted to keep working together as well. But he had a really good deal at Mondraker and he had a pretty small window of time early in the off season that he kind of needed to either take it or leave it type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Intense pulled out, you know, I just couldn't see clear enough with where I was going to like, hey dude, hold off for 4 months until I figure this out. And, you know, it was like, you know, we chatted about it a bit and it was like, dude, that's a good deal. Like you should take it. Cool. So, yeah, so we're all good there, but yeah, for sure. Plan on riding together a lot once I'm back on the bike.
Nice. I know Seth was on Intense with you, but don't know much about Mikey. Like, can you tell us about him a little bit? Like how you found him and all that?
Yeah. So Mikey, I actually met him pretty randomly at a World Champs in Leger 2022, I guess that would have been. So yeah, about a year and a half ago. And just like awesome kid, man. Like everything I look for and guys that are on our program, especially young and up and coming riders, he reminds me a lot of Seth when Seth was a junior, like just the happiest, most stoked kid, super level head, like really excited and happy and positive, but also pretty chill for a 17-year-old, which is good. Like he's not this wild and crazy out of control kid. And just, yeah, he has a really good head on his shoulders. I've been working with him already for about a year, like just kind of helping mentor him. I got him hooked up with Todd Shumlick at Performax on the training program. And he just committed to it like hard. Like he's been putting on size, like he's just so dialed with his training. And so I talked to Todd and, you know, I obviously kind of keep tabs on him because I feel like he's a really talented rider with a lot of potential here in the next, you know, 2 to 3 years. And he's like, man, Mikey's working hard. Like he never misses a workout. He communicates really well. Like he just does all the things that we look for in a young rider, and he's just a good kid. So, yeah, there was kind of an opportunity this year where it was like, all right, I still want to have at least 2 guys on the team. The budgets are going to be a little bit lower. And it was like, who would I want to work with that I feel like could be a really good fit? And I do like working with these younger up and coming riders like we did with Seth. And so, yeah, Mikey was just kind of in the perfect position. It worked out really well.
Cool. Are you, you know, you hinted at this a little bit ago about the number of frames, but, you know, when you mentioned that you're on Crestline, I was kind of doing the math of like, all right, there's 3 of you racing World Cups. Are there enough downhill frames to keep you guys sorted for the year? Just because they didn't seem like a massive brand, but you said that's covered.
Yep. Yeah. All good. So yeah, it was funny. I was chatting with Troyden a couple of days ago and we were just kind of laughing. Cause like the things that kind of came together at the times they did for this deal to like sort of line up perfect where it was possible. And like all the pieces were in place. Like he literally, I think, I don't know when it was, a few months ago, the frames are made by VIP and I can't remember, not the China office, the other one. But anyways, they had called and said, hey, this mold is still in really good shape. If you guys want to make like another 20 frames, we can do it basically before we scrap the mold. And Troyden was like, well, we've sold out of the 50 we made, you know, and they have obviously spares for warranties and stuff like that right. They keep. And so he was like, sure, why not? Like, let's make another 20. Like, we'll figure something out. Cool. We'll sell them or we'll ride them or we'll, you know, do custom colors or whatever. So he ordered an additional 20 frames that were never planned because the mold was in good shape and they could do it. And then, yeah, so we basically have 20 more frames coming. Okay. So right. So we're well sorted.
Yeah, dude, that's so awesome.
But I mean, if that wouldn't have happened, then like the deal would have been perfect, but he would have been like, dude, we don't have any bikes for you guys to race. So it worked out pretty good.
Yeah, dude, okay, good. Yeah, that was one of the first things. I'm like, dude, they got enough frames to ride for the World Cup? But
yeah, for sure. Yeah, and we definitely don't need 20 frames between the three of us to get through a year. But, you know, you definitely need a race bike and a couple spares. So. We're good.
And you mentioned, and it seemed pretty obvious based on the photos, but Cascade Link will be there helping you guys tweak stuff as needed.
Yeah. Jimmy at Cascade's the guy I've been chatting with so far. We already have a couple different linkage options that they've been developing. Sam Blankensop was on the bikes last year. He had a link that he was running. So we've already kind of got 3 different options right now, depending on kind of how you want the bike to feel. Or the course or whatever. So we've already got quite a bit of stuff, like options we can play with. And then obviously we're kind of working on, you know, if we do need another one, what will that look like? But right now I feel like we've got a really good range of where we can get it. I just need to get on the bike and start testing through them.
Okay. And was it easy to line up with Fox suspension on this? Like, I assume they can just kind of tune the shock however you need it and make sure it's set up right.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, as long as you have a bike that works really well and the numbers aren't like so far off in left field, like the suspension works really good. If you've backed yourself into a corner where like you need a specific suspension company with like a very specific setup or the bike doesn't work, your frame is not right. So it won't be a big deal. I was really happy because Seth has gotten older and more experienced and faster the last couple of years, he's starting to develop a good sense for how a bike feels and where it's at. You know, he was like Mikey when he first came on, where like I would just set his bike up for him and be like, here, go ride this. And he's like, everything felt amazing. It was the best thing he's ever ridden type of thing. And so, but now Seth is definitely more tuned in to what he feels and everything. So I'm happy because just after his comfort on the bike straight away, like within like literally 2 runs. A lot of times if you jump on a bike, sometimes you're like, man, this thing just feels at home really, really quick. It doesn't do anything weird. It doesn't have anything strange going on. But sometimes you get on a bike and you're like, wow, this is going to take a little bit of adjusting. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to have to adjust your rodding style to fit a certain bike a little bit. So mm-hmm. Seth basically was like, dude, you know, I asked him basically after a couple runs, like, how do you feel? And he's like, I feel like I can go just as fast on it as I did my intense. And I was like, wow, like, all right, like, that's good. So we did do some tuning and, you know, we started dialing and suspension and messing with stuff, but he said the comfort on the bike pretty much straight away was just, it's a naturally easy, comfortable bike to ride, which is really good. Cause I usually like bikes that are just kind of in the middle, like really well-rounded, not like too extreme in any direction. And then, yeah, we started fine tuning from there. So based off of his feedback, it sounds like he's already really close to basically being like 100% happy with where he's at. So, so that definitely made me happy. And just looking at the numbers too, I mean, the Intense M29, for example, that was a VPP bike, but the numbers were really extreme. Like they were, you know, really good in some situations, but honestly, like,
are you talking about like progression and anti-squat, anti-rise, all that stuff?
Yeah, a lot of that stuff. Yeah, like there was a few things with the M29 that we just couldn't tune around. For an average rider, it was a really stable, like pretty good mm-hmm. bike. But at a World Cup level, like it was just tough to hang mm-hmm. on to. So this bike, the numbers are definitely right in the range where I think they need to be. So I don't anticipate like massive changes in any direction. I think it'll be a little fine tuning here or there, but we'll see. Like I said, Seth already seems like he's pretty much ready to go to a World Cup and race tomorrow if he had to. So, I'm just excited to kind of dig into it.
I'm going to jump a little bit here, but like, do you guys have a specific lap that you test at Windrock on that gives you the, you know, what you think is like a World Cup base setting?
Yeah, there's a couple, basically like trail one and middle finger is the racetrack at Windrock, like where we race the Tennessee National and stuff. Yep. Those are kind of the two main trails we test. There's another trail called Caveman that we test a bit. If you're testing bike setup specifically and suspension, it's really like trail one and middle finger. They're the roughest, kind of biggest impact trails. One thing that I'm super excited about is now that we own Windrock, I can build whatever I want. So you better believe we're building the ultimate test track right now.
Sweet.
So no more of this, like, do your testing and then go to the World Cup and instantly have to crank all your compression in further. So the new Tennessee National track we've been working on is going to be like basically an all new track. Like, it kind of follows the same general route that it's followed in the past, but like very different, a lot of new fresh sections, and the existing sections we're really building it to make it feel like a World Cup track as far as your bike. So we have really good tracks there to test now. I mean, they were already, I feel like, some of the absolute best stuff in the US to test on, but they will be better now. So yeah, I think we're definitely good on the test tracks.
Can you say what was missing from what existed to going to a World Cup? Like, what kind of sections? Is it speed? Is it just the raw rowdiness?
It's that stuff that you just kind of hate to ride, like just build the biggest, grossest G out that just wants to like Dakota and I were joking because I took Dakota down the Tennessee National track a few weeks ago and I was like, hey, dude, here's the changes. Here's what I'm wanting to do. Like, I wanted to get his feedback and we were chatting about some other changes and we just laugh because it's like, yeah, can you just like make this jump land in like a full on uphill? Like, if it's like trying to make you do a front flip and you're just, your whole goal is to keep your face from bouncing off the stem, like World Cup, you're ready.
Yeah.
So that's really what it's been missing. I mean, Windrock mm-hmm. is rough. Like, the racetracks have always been rough,
mm-hmm.
Like really hard on your hands and everything, but it's a lot of that like mid bump, like just repetitive rough stuff. The thing that World Cups give you is like with the steepness of the tracks and how many riders are on them, like how G'd out they get, like you really get this like bam, bam, like big repetitive holes where the bike is just working through all the travel like repeatedly in like a short space. So that's really the thing, you know, like you get a bike at Windrock and you'd be like, oh, the setup's really good. It's super rough. but there's not those like big hits, you know, where you're bottoming out, you know, 5-6 times a lap type of thing. You know, at Windrock, you'd be like, oh, there's one spot where you really get the thing to slam hard and the rest of it's mid bump. So, yeah, we have changed that.
So basically not fun to ride at all.
Not fun to ride if you're,
going to your
bike,
speed.
If your bike isn't working good and you're going R speed. If your bike's working good, it's great. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's sick.
So yeah, just more of that real big impact stuff. But doing it in a way where it's not sketchy, you know what I mean? Like you can build stuff that's big and gnarly like that that isn't high risk. So you can really do repetitive laps, you know, when you're testing and you want to do a lot of laps. You want to be able to get the bike to really work hard without riding some super sketchy trail that's going to be hard to just repeat something, you know, 50 times in a row over a week of riding type of thing.
Ooh, cool. That's exciting. You'd mentioned, like, just to me when we were trying to set this up, that you were at a Red Bull camp this week. Is that something you can talk about and explain kind of what goes on there? Like, I think there's a lot of people are kind of curious as to what it means to be a Red Bull athlete. And then, you know, you said, yeah, I'm going to a Red Bull camp. I'm like, well, what's that mean? You know, is it for bikes? Is it, you know, more than that? Like, can you talk about that stuff?
Yeah, for sure. They're all a little different. Like I've been with Red Bull now since 2012, I think. So a little over 10 years, they've been a huge supporter of mine. Been lucky to go to a few athlete summits and different camps, and they're all a little different. Sometimes it's literally like, we just want to get all of our athletes together and do something awesome. So for example, a couple of years ago, Red Bull threw like a massive athlete summit in Texas, and they basically just invited all the Red Bull athletes from every sport out. And it was like a 3-4 day camp. They actually rented out Willie Nelson's property and just outside of Austin, Texas. Uh-huh. So we landed at the airport. They drove us. There's a really big outdoor like surf wave pool in Texas.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah, that thing looks Austin. Super fun. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was epic. So they drove us there. We surfed for like half a day after we landed, and then they picked us up in a helicopter and flew us to Willie Nelson's ranch. And then we basically were there. They rented like RVs on the ranch, so each RV had like 4 athletes in it.
Okay.
And I think there was like 10 RVs or something like that.
Okay.
So it was, dude, it was like once in a lifetime experience. I'm a big music and guitar guy.
Yeah.
And Willie's son, Lucas Nelson, played like a private show for us on his property where he grew up.
How cool is that?
And, dude, like the coolest. It was insane. And I've been a huge fan of his ever since. So we did that. And then we had a couple days of like just different activities, like fun stuff. And then we went to that big music festival that was there. So sometimes it's literally like, hey guys, we just want to get everybody together and have a great time and celebrate sport and just being an awesome team and being a Red Bull athlete. This camp was basically a lot smaller. It was just right here in Nashville, their headquarters for the Delta region, they call it, which is basically the Southeast around here. It's right here in Nashville. And so they just had all their athletes from this region, which I think there's only about 5 of us.
Okay.
Like a couple BMXers, skateboarder, and a kayaker, all like awesome dudes that I hadn't actually gotten to know or hadn't met before. So this camp was a little more, first day was kind of a little bit of product training, because they do have new products that kind of come in and out, you know, more than just flavors, I guess. And they also, you know, and it was actually kind of cool to do because I think everybody knows Red Bull is like an energy drink. But even for me, like it was fairly educational. And I mean, I drink the drinks and I've been on the company for a long time, but they kind of line it up against other competitors. And it's like, hey, like, you know, for example, a can of Red Bull, of original Red Bull, has about the same amount of caffeine as a regular cup of coffee would have. And they're showing you other energy drinks and things that are marketed as like healthy. And they have like 6 cups of coffee worth of caffeine in them and like certain things and reading through the ingredients. So there is a little bit of like, hey, here's our, not that you guys don't know it, but like, here's our product. Here's some of our new product. Mm-hmm. Here's the ingredients that are in it and why we put it in it. And, you know, with Red Bull, their big thing is like, we want this to be a specific drink that you drink for specific moments. You know, if you're going to the gym or if you want to be at your absolute best, like this is when you drink it type of thing. And so anyways, there was a little bit of like just chatting about product and upcoming things they had. And then most of the this camp was kind of based around media.
So
they brought in a big time media team that kind of analyzed all of our social media channels and kind of talked about like, hey, here's some things you could do, or here's how we could help, or here's, you know, whatever. And then honestly, most of the camp, and this is like typical awesome Red Bull style, was like, we just want to talk through the craziest ideas you guys have ever had and always dreamed of doing for like a whole day. So show up with like 3 to 5 ideas and let's just round table it with the group. So basically the 5 of us athletes each got to like one at a time be like, well, I've always wanted to ride a mountain bike down the side of a volcano and I want it to look like this and I want it to whatever. And they're like, perfect, love it. Well, what does that look like? And then all the other athletes are like, that would be cool. What if you did it like this? Or what if, you know what I mean? So it was like kind of this ideation session where it was like, you know, they're always just like, what's the next awesome thing that we can do? And how would, you know, how would we make some dream you guys have had forever come to reality in your sport? So it was really cool, man, because it's, you know, everybody's has these crazy ideas and things that they would love to do. But as athletes, when you can get together and talk about those things too, like everybody has something to add and a different perspective. And so these ideas like kind of escalate pretty quickly. And then they literally like take all the ideas and the next day are like, all right, here's the ones we're going to start working on like right now. And
wow, that quick.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, they're literally like, what do you guys want to do? And you come up with some crazy idea and they're like, great, let's figure out if we can do that. So, that was a lot of the camp, was just kind of getting everybody together, enjoying spending time together, and just kind of like, how can we support you guys in some sort of crazy thing you want to do? So, yeah, that was kind of this camp. So it was pretty cool.
Okay. Interesting. Who was the skater?
Oh, shoot. Now you're putting me on the spot. And I'm totally Jake. what's Jake's last name? I'm forgetting his last name. He's right here in Tennessee, right? In Gallatin, close to us. Yeah, I actually met him at the Red Bull, did like a F1 event in downtown Nashville with Daniel Ricciardo like a month or two ago. And so I met him there for the first time. So we've kind of become buddies. And then Terry Adams, the Flatland BMX guy.
Oh, yeah.
He was there. And dude, I've been a fan of Terry. Like you know, obviously grew up riding BMX. And so Terry's been the man for like, I don't even know, like forever. 20 years.
Yeah.
And so he was awesome. Spent some time with him. Brock, I'm spacing on their last names now. Yeah. He's another BMX kid. I think he won like Simple Sessions a year or two ago. He's coming off a knee injury, but just a total savage on like BMX park riding. He was there. And then a kayaker that's like, dude, the craziest stuff you've ever seen.
Just so, like off waterfalls and crazy slots.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's Dane, I believe is his name. Yeah, I don't know. Now that I'm on the spot, I'm forgetting. But yeah, it was just cool, man. Like I've done a couple of these projects with Red Bull. We did one in Pittsburgh a couple of years ago. It was called like Red Bull, like steepest street or something. So they found the steepest street in America, which is based, I guess, this street in Pittsburgh, and literally it's like straight down.
Yeah, it looked crazy.
And they, yeah, and we did like an Audi commercial on it too. So they like brought in snow machines and like snow blowers and covered the whole street with snow. So it was like they showed the car like ripping up this steep street in the snow, and then like me and a skier and a snowboarder and everybody like coming down the hill and like all. So it was like, it's just cool because you get to meet athletes in other sports, and especially when it's a type group like that, like 4 or 5 guys, and you have 3 days together, like it's pretty rad. Like you always have a good time, make some cool memories, and you end up leaving with like some cool friends that you stay in touch with.
Yeah. Cool. All right. You just brought up snow. So what do you think about that whole thing? Snow bike world champ.
I mean, if people are stoked and they get people to show up and it's rad, then I say, heck yeah, go for it. But from me watching it personally as a mountain biker, I was like, I could probably miss that one.
I hear you.
Not to say there's maybe not something there in the future if you built the courses different, but I don't know. Yeah. I prefer dirt.
All right. That. Sounds good. That wasn't even on the list. So that's all we need to talk about with that one. All right. So, you know, not quite a year ago, the first World Cup Vital Raw clip of 2023 was you exploding yourself in those rocks at Lenzerheide, and that was not something anyone wanted to see. you're still recovering from it. Can you kind of walk us through everything basically from then to now? Like, give us a Cliff Notes version, but going face first at 1,000 miles an hour into those rocks, like, couldn't even imagine.
Yeah, it sucked, dude. Like, it sometimes, like, all the worst possible things line up in, like, the right kind of way. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, yeah, I mean, pretty much, like, I mean, as I've talked about a lot, like, the goal last year was to be in a position to fight for a World Cup overall championship and a world championship. Like, those were my goals, was to try to win those two things.
Yep.
I podiumed like 3 of the last 4 races coming out of 2022. We had this new bike. Like, I had an amazing off season. I felt better, stronger than I kind of ever had coming into the season. I felt like I was really smart. Like, I crashed like 2 times, I think, in all of 2022. Like really, like, went like 7 World Cup races in a row without even crashing. Like, I was really trying to do things smart and safe. Not that you can ever guarantee that, because it's mountain biking, but I had a really good off season for 6 months. Like, I don't think I had any really crashes. Like, just was building up nice and slow, just checking the boxes. We were right on pace. And then, yeah, I went to Switzerland. I think it was my 3rd practice run. The track started dry that morning, and it was really hard pack. And then it rained for like an hour. So it got that like real slippery, like greasy layer on top, but it wasn't muddy. Like, the track was still fast because it was hard pack, but it rained just enough to like slime up the top layer. So I was like, I remember just kind of taking it easy and was like, yeah, it's just practice day. Let's just get in some runs and get familiar with the track and, you know, be smart about it. Amory had a really big crash that morning that basically took him out for the season, I believe. And I was kind of coming through this rock section and the rocks were just a little bit slippery. And there's this weird little like wiggle in the track that all the riders have basically complained about for years, but you basically have like a tree and then like a big, big square rock. And there's like tree and rock, and you have to go like right between the two, and you're going through rocks before you do it. And your pedal's probably clear by like this much on both sides. Like, it literally forces you to wiggle, and they're big, you know, they're probably 1.5 feet. That rock is like pretty big. So you kind of come in sideways over some stuff, and then you got to like thread the needle. And then right after that, there's like a 5-foot drop into some rocks. And so I just kind of came in decent speed. I don't honestly really know what happened. Like, the bike just skipped out just a little bit. And because you're so close to those rocks, like, it skipped out literally like 2 inches. And I think my frame, like the rear part of my like rear triangle or whatever, like, hit the rock on the side and kind of hooked up and pitched. And if it would have been anywhere else on the track, I just would have like taken a foot off and kind of like gotten squirrely and like skidded maybe out through the tape, and I would have been fine. But because there was that 5-foot drop, like, right there, like, there was nowhere to try to save it. So I had to kind of like eject off the bike, which might have been okay too. But that rock wall had like a bunch of boulders in it, and one of those boulders had basically come loose, and they had just pushed it like 1 foot outside of the course tape. Like, they didn't move it further out. So like, I jumped off the bike, and then basically like, I would have slammed pretty hard, but I landed, if you slow-mo the video, like, I landed my leg like right in front of that big rock. So my leg, like, I was pretty lucky not to break my leg with how it, like, my leg was sore for weeks. But the thing kind of like caught me and then like just like whiplashed me into the ground extra hard. So it was kind of just like all these little things just kind of lined up like just right to make a very small mistake turn into like very high consequence. So yeah, just slammed the ground hard. I could feel my arm like pretty much as soon as I hit the ground. I was like, man, that like that hurt. My leg was honestly hurting a little bit worse. But I don't know, you know, sometimes you smack the ground hard and things hurt, and then a few minutes later you're like, yeah, I think we're okay. So I was just trying to be positive, because I was like, I can't believe that just happened on the 3rd run. But I went to like lift my arm. And I've broken bones before. There's like a certain feeling when you break a bone that people can relate to. Like, you get it into the right position and it's just like, oh, like, whoa, like, something's not, like, it's not connected almost. Yeah. Like, and there's a sharp pain. So it was kind of doing that. And I knew when I picked my bike up and I sat on the bike and I grabbed the bars, and that's usually my test after I crash. I'll kind of pull and push on the bars if something's hurting. And when I went to pull on the bar, I could tell like something was not right. I had like no strength. Like it was like a light switch, like boom, like, nope, it's not there. And so I, luckily there was a road like 50 feet from where I crashed. So I pushed the bike over to the road and I just rode down the hill one handed and, got back to the pits. And long story short, you know, like we went to the hospital and I was like, well, maybe it's not broken. Maybe I just like really like zinged it pretty hard. And we got x-rays and they're like, no, it's broken. And I was like, and I was like, well, maybe it's not bad enough that you need surgery, because I broke bones before and they just heal on their own. And we got some more follow-up images and they're like, nope, it's going to need surgery. And I was like, so then, you know, it was like, okay, do we fly back to Nashville and get surgery, or do I stay in Europe and get surgery there? So I was chatting with Red Bull. They were awesome. They made a bunch of calls to like their top doctors over in Munich, and we had surgery scheduled there. But after talking to some of my doctors here, they were like, hey dude, like that's kind of a gnarly bone to break the way you did it. And they're probably going to have to mess with the ligaments a little bit. It's not going to be a fun week or two after surgery. Like you probably want to come home for this one. 'Cause I wanted to stay and support the team. And I was like, you know, we had an off week, I think. So I was like, maybe I can get surgery and then I'll go to Leo Gang and at least help the boys out. And we were supposed to do like a vacation with my wife and her mom. And so we kind of ended up canceling everything. And I came home and got the surgery here. And I'm really happy I did, because it was a gnarly one. Like I've had a couple surgeries before, and sometimes you're like a bit nauseous for like a day from the medicine or whatever. And then you're like, you're just kind of chilling. Like I'm not one, I never take like the hard pain pills. I'll just ibuprofen for a few days and then just deal with it. But this one was like a couple weeks of like miserable pain. Like really had a hard time sleeping. There was like no position where it was comfortable. So I had to wait a couple weeks for the swelling to kind of go down before I could get surgery. And then I had surgery, and then it was like a rough month, but definitely the first 2 weeks sucked.
Is it your elbow, like part of your arm? Where was it?
Yeah. So it was the, radial head. Like it's basically like the socket in your elbow that like moves. And so I broke that, the head, into like three pieces with some little bonus things hanging off.
And do you think that was like an impact into the rock, or was it the way your arm bent?
I don't know. Like I can't remember really how I landed. Like I had a big elbow pad on and everything, like I always ride with. So it was just like the force when I guess it's like a fairly common injury for, you know, big crashes like that. Like the force of the head slamming into the joint is hard enough to break the head. So it's not actually from like the impact. I think it was somewhere else is where I took the slam, but it just like jammed it in there so hard that it broke it. So yeah, the bone wasn't honestly too big of a deal. They just put three like really small screws in it, and the screws like countersink into the bone, so the bone heals around the outside and then it's like nice and smooth. And they're pretty small. When they got in there, it was like a little worse than the images look, so they had to clean a few things up. But the thing that sucked is like the last screw that they went to put in to get it at the perfect angle to make sure that bone spacing was perfect and tight, because if you don't get the head like perfectly smooth and like in the right spot, it will grind in that capsule or whatever, and then you'll have issues down the road. So it was really important that they got the spacing and everything like just perfect on that, so that I'll never have issues. But to do that, they ended up having to like detach part of the tendon on the forearm, and then they had to like pull everything over to get that screw in and then reattach it. Dude. So that's where my complications have been from the tendon, not the bone. So, yeah, that was probably a long-winded answer. So that was the surgery. And then long story short, basically I was hoping I would be back in 3 to 4 months, like, and they were, you know, the doctor was like, hey dude, like it's probably going to be at least a year before you feel like you don't really notice this thing. Like, and I was like, really? Like, dang, because I've had full shoulder reconstruction surgeries and stuff like that, and in 4 months I'm back on the bike feeling like pretty good. And he's like, yeah, I mean, we'll we'll try everything we can. He's like, but this isn't one of those injuries that you can rush. He's like, a lot of people that have elbow injuries, if you push it too hard too soon and you don't get full range back, they'll tighten up and literally like lock in bent, and like you'll never get that range back.
Yeah.
He's like, so you're going to need to be really smart and patient on this one. So anyways, like I was training like super hard right out of surgery. Like as far as like I was in PT, like every day I was in the gym, I was doing cardio. Like I was really trying to keep myself in tip top shape to come back and race those last couple World Cups. Cause I think we had like 4 months until they were happening, or 5 months. So pretty much went hard for like 3-4 months and then realized like, we're not even going to be close.
Crazy.
So yeah, we just stayed on the PT. I've still been doing it now. And then, yeah, I think when the bone kind of healed, I got fairly strong, especially like holding stuff, not pushing, but like pulling. And so we were at the bike park and we were doing a bunch of rock work around the bike shop and stuff. And I was doing my PT and I was starting to ride, and it was definitely really weak and I had to ride really easy, but it wasn't really painful. And then I think just between the gym work I was doing and like picking up, you know, baseball size rocks at the bike park, I kind of fired up that tendon a bit. Mm-hmm. And so that thing got like, I kind of got tendonitis in like 3 spots in my elbow, and like just from the surgery and everything, like it was just, dude, it was like pissed off for months. So it kind of went backwards for a few months. Okay. And I had to like stop riding, stop doing like any kind of repetitive work, and like really be detailed for the last couple of months. And now I feel like now I've got full range back. I'm in the gym, I'm starting to ride without pain. And it's like, there's a light at the end of the tunnel, but dude, it's been rough. I've never had an injury that's been, usually, you know, it's like, it starts to get better and then you're like, cool, a few more months, like it'll be perfect. Yeah. Like this thing is like, you have to work on it almost every day. But if you overwork it just a little bit, it like goes backwards, a week.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, or 2 weeks or a month. So anyways, I think we're pretty much past a lot of that now. Like it feels really good. Okay. I'm getting strong in the gym. I can start riding. It's coming along, but dude, it's been 8 months plus. So it's been hard.
Yeah, dude, that's a long time. Okay. And so, you know, at the start of the show, you kind of mentioned, you seem to think that the first couple World Cups might not happen. Just, if you take your time, is Worlds really your goal this year?
Yeah, 100%. Good. That has basically been my goal kind of from the last 2 or 3 months, when I kind of realized like, all right, dude, you're not going to be able to just like strongman your way through this injury and like tough it out. Like you're going to need to be really smart and take your time and don't come back until it's really ready. So that's basically been the goal. If I can be back on the bike 100% strong and healthy by the beginning of July is my goal.
Okay.
I'll have almost 2 months from that time to do like US National Champs, probably Crankworx, Whistler, some good prep races, and then come back for Worlds. If I can get back sooner than that, I will. Like Leger is right on the front end of that. But I'm just kind of at the point where, you know, I don't want to just go roll around. If I'm going to race, I want to be, you know, competing for podiums and wins. So that's the plan. Yeah, my goal and pretty much whole aim is to really be ripping at Worlds. It's at Andorra this year. It's probably my favorite track or second favorite track on the circuit. If there's one that I think I could come back on, and it's, I don't want to like say
dusty SoCal style to some degree,
right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't want to use the word easy, because it sure would not be easy to win, but that would be an easier track for me to come back at than probably any other track on the circuit. So the goal is to be ripping for that race and then to finish the season from there, but we'll see, because I think depending on how this goes, I could be pretty solid in another like 2 months or so. So if it's sooner than that, then I'll race sooner.
Okay. And so like, if you feel like you're 100% healthy and you've got the bike doing what you want it to do, like you feel like a win is possible, even considering like how gnarly the field seems to be these days.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I just got to go on past experience, right? Like last time I raced Andorra, I felt like I definitely could have won the race. And if I'm healthy and the bike's good and I've got enough time to get comfortable, it's like, I don't know. I always believe that if my equipment's good and I'm good, that I could always win.
And it's so on. Yep.
That's what I want to do for sure.
I mean, I guess you can kind of analyze it over your career, but like, does a winning race run, does it have to be outside of like control and comfort these days? Like, do you have to be taking risks you normally wouldn't want to take?
I don't think so. I've never ridden like that. You need to ride right at that edge from the start gate to the finish line, but I don't think you need to go over it to win, or at least I don't feel like I need to. I think that if I'm getting beat, and you know, say I get beat by 2 or 3 seconds or 4 seconds or whatever it is, I would look at, okay, where do you need to be better? You know what I mean? Like, all right, you need to be a little stronger here. You need to be a little faster here. Your bike needs to be a little better here. I would never think like, dude, you're absolutely, at least so far, I haven't gotten to the point where I'm like, I'm absolutely tapped. Like, I can't go any faster than that. Okay. Everything is absolutely perfect. So now I need to ride over my head. Thankfully, okay, I haven't gotten there yet. Usually, you know, even, you know, I podiumed a lot of those races on the back half of 2022. And all of them, like I would know when I crossed the finish line, like, yep, I know how much time I left on the track. And if somebody goes and gets that, the winning time is going to be right here. And I know why I've lost it. Not that it's easy to go get it, but yeah, for me, if I need to ride over my head to win, then I will probably stop racing.
Do you have any idea? I mean, it's just a guess here, but like, our top consistent riders, do you think they're the same way? Like, can you not be a top rider and be consistent by riding over your head all the time?
Yeah, I don't think you can. I mean, you got a lot of guys that'll, you know, have some flashes of brilliance, as we call them, and maybe even win a race, but they're on the ground a bunch. You know, there's those championship guys like Bruni and some of these other guys that just consistently, not that they haven't had crashes as well, but, you know, they're always up there. And I think nowadays you have to factor that in too. You know, consistency plays a large role. So sometimes it's like, okay, I'm willing to, you know, potentially give up a second or two here or there, and maybe even a win occasionally, because it's not worth the risk to go get it because you want to win the title. So I think it's different for everybody. And some guys I think are more willing to take the risk than others. And there's always an element of risk in downhill that you just can't control. You know what I mean? I didn't feel like I was riding over my head at all when I crashed, but it's just, sometimes you're wrong place, wrong time, or something works out just right where you have a huge crash. So that's kind of downhill. But yeah, for me personally, I definitely like try to ride within my limits and be pretty smart about stuff.
Okay. Interesting. All right. So what are your thoughts on competing against someone like Jackson Goldstone? Like, we've heard Greg and Loic like kind of imply that they need to adjust their riding style or even their body type to be more like Jackson's after seeing what he's doing. Do you have any thoughts on that? Like, do you feel like you have to match what he's like to compete with someone like him? And I know he's still young and like, he's starting to show his form, but I thought it was super interesting to hear Greg and Loic talk that way.
Yeah, I think, for me personally, I would disagree with that. I think you have to ride to your strengths. I don't think you're going to completely change your riding style. And I think trying to ride like somebody else is not going to make things better. But if you can learn, if somebody's doing something better, then obviously it would be dumb not to pick up on those things, you know? Okay. But I think Jackson will continue to improve as well. I think he's going to get bigger and taller and stronger and a lot of those things as he gets older, I would imagine. You know, I think for Jackson, like he's been riding for so long. He has so much natural skill and talent on a bike. The way he does things, he's very efficient kind of naturally because he's so skilled, you know, so he doesn't need to be like the strongest guy in the field or the, you know, whatever. So, I don't know, man. Like, I don't, honestly, I've been really impressed watching him ride. But I've been kind of so focused on trying to get myself healthy and like the things I'm doing that like, when I get back on the bike, I'm definitely not going to be like, okay, how do I go ride like Jackson? I'm going to be like, how do I get back to doing what I do? You know what I mean? Yep. And go from there. But I think anytime somebody comes in with that level of talent, you know, he does see the track. I've noticed the things that I've picked up more than his rodding style or technique, even though I believe he does have some of the best technique I've seen. He views a track a little different. I kind of came in like that, like where I was doing different lines and different things that a lot of people weren't doing. I'm noticing some of the same things out of him. Like sometimes he does something and you're like, whoa, I would have never thought to like maybe double that thing over there or go, you know, whatever. So there is some creativity. And as the level rises, it's like you start to look at the track a little different. You know, everybody's like, like maybe you could do that or maybe whatever, you know what I mean? Uh-huh. So, and the young kids are always more down to take risk for sure. So that'll be the thing, you know, with the young kids, it's like, can they stay healthy? Can they do it consistently? You know, keep the confidence up. But I think with Jackson, like, yeah, I mean, he has everything it takes to maybe be the greatest the sport has seen. So we'll see.
Do you have much insight as to what World Cups will look like next year? Because it sounds like we've got quali and semis on the same day, which seems cool to me. And then you've got junior and elite finals the next day. Is that, that's how it's going?
Yeah, I think so. I was really involved with this a couple of months ago when they were trying to figure it out. Not that I have a say, but you know, I was trying to help advise on some things with the riders group that I help with and all that. But yeah, qualies and semis will be on the day before the race now, which will be cool. I know a lot of the athletes pretty much just want to get rid of semis completely. And I kind of agree. And I think the plan is to go that way next year in 2025. I think there'll be some bigger changes. But I also understand the opposite side where if you just come in and implement all these changes overnight in the first year, I mean, qualifying a full pack down to 30 and one qualifier is pretty gnarly. Sure. Like there's a lot of people that are going to go home that are spending a lot of money. And if you don't have another way to support those riders somehow, or make the level still seem reasonable to get to a finals, you know, it's just a big cut in 1 year. So, for me, the big thing that I really wanted was, you know, like most riders, is to keep race day, race day. Like race day in downhill is special because it's race day. There's one run and to see who's going to be the fastest for the weekend. You don't feel like you've got like finals number one and then finals number two. Like you just watched it. Course conditions are the same. Everything's kind of the same. And you just like repeat the process. I felt like semis kind of watered down the finals. So for sure. I'm really happy that race day will just have all the hype and buildup of a proper race day again.
Cool.
And then, yeah, we'll see kind of what happens in the future, but it seems like everybody's on the same page and wanting to make the sport better and do the best that everybody can do. And I think next year will be very interesting with some of the plans and how that looks. I think it will be good overall from what I've seen so far. So this year is just kind of another step closer to that from what I understand.
Yeah, I think that split seems like a good idea to have qualies and semis on the same day. So, okay. How does your team fit into the World Cup? Because there are different levels of team based on kind of how you register and pay and all that. Are you guys the highest level? I don't know what the terms are off the top of my head.
Yeah. So there's like a UCI, dude, I don't know. I don't know. There's two levels of team. I know that there's basically your elite teams. Yep. Which you have to have a certain amount of points as a team from the year before.
Okay.
And then I think there's like one or two additional spots that can be like voted in. So you do pay a little bit more money, but you have like priority pit space.
Yeah.
Like you park in like the more priority pit space. I think you might also get like a couple more passes like for your team managers and stuff like that from who has access. And there's a few other benefits as well, but yeah, there's basically only so many spots for an elite team. And then the rest of them are kind of your, I don't know what they call them, just your regular trade teams or whatever. So, from the points with me being hurt last year and the team changing with our riders, we don't have enough points to be an elite team. And I would guess we probably wouldn't be voted in. I haven't honestly paid attention, but I think we'll just be like, just a regular kind of UCI trade team this year.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Do you know what your pits are going to look like? You have that setup figured out yet or anything?
Yeah, so we're basically sticking with what we've done the last five seasons. We had like two big sprinter vans and like four really big tents. We've kind of decided to travel a little lighter because we don't have like a big headquarters or a base in Europe. And when we were within tents, they don't really have one either. So having like a big semi truck and a driver over there and all that, like the budget is just so big to do that. A lot of the big factories, you know, have, they're either based in Europe or have massive, you know, headquarters in Europe, which we don't have. So we've kind of run a little more efficiently. So we're basically doing the same thing this year, but we're going to downsize just a little bit because we have three riders instead of four now. Mm-hmm. So we had a pretty big space before. So, I think we're going to downsize to one really big van. And then we have all of our support vehicles, like, you know, for getting people to the airport and doing all that kind of stuff. And then just, I think we're going from four tents to like two or three. So we're putting all that together now. But yeah, essentially our pit setup will stay the same. It will just downsize a little bit since we're a little bit smaller of a team.
All right. Our forum crew, like all the awesome dudes on the Vital Forums, this one was spearheaded by Dave Camp. He kind of kicked it off and then people added to it. But they put together your current responsibility list. So we've got your bike park owner, operator, World Cup racer coming back from injury, race team owner, operator, bike company owner, operator, potential announcer for races, PerformX camp instructor, husband, sometimes vlogger. Are we missing anything? Like property manager? Like how do you juggle all this stuff? Are we missing anything? Like what's a typical week like for you?
Yeah. There's a few more things in there. Some really? Of it personal. And I mean, we have some real estate stuff we do.
Okay.
I've got a rental property in North Carolina. It's called the Ridgeline Retreat. So if you guys are ever going to Pisgah or Brevard, check it out.
All right. Sick.
Airbnb. But yeah, we have a rental property out there that we kind of dialed in as like a mountain bike getaway. So it's got like this sick garage with bike wash and bike stands and tools and all that stuff. And it's in Mills River. It's right next to like Pisgah and Brevard.
Okay.
So we have that. We have a couple other investment properties that we have that I'm kind of, I love real estate and a lot of it, whether it's houses or land or whatever. So, you know, I'm always looking at stuff and, you know, I don't know, doing deals or considering things. Like we've got a 110 acre property kind of close to us right now that I'm getting quotes on, like getting utilities to all the pads that are there. And, you know, so we've always got like, I'm usually involved in some sort of land real estate thing. And we actually just bought another house, 2 days ago. So we're moving out of this house. Like the appraiser was just here today and we'll be moving down south. This house was kind of meant to be like a temporary 2 to 3 year house when we first moved to Nashville till we kind of vibed out the area. We had a lot of friends that moved out here. So kind of wanted to see where everybody landed. So anyways, we've kind of found our longer term home here. So we just closed on that a few days ago. I've got a high performance facility in Whistler that we'll be kind of talking about here in the future that I've partnered with.
Okay.
It's basically right at the base of in Whistler Village. So it'll be like a high performance training facility. We'll also partnered with NeuroCatch, which is like a big, it's like a brain scanning device. Basically it's like a portable device that can measure head trauma like at on site in like 7 minutes. Without having any kind of baseline tests you have to do before. So I've been chatting with the UCI and that whole team of trying to implement this into the World Cup medical stuff in the future. Because right now our concussion protocol is lacking in my opinion. So I'm really trying to push on that side. So I've got a partnership with NeuroCatch that we're working on. So they'll be kind of involved in the training facility. And hopefully we're going to work them into the races somehow, even if I just need to do it myself. So we've got that going on and a few other things. We'll be teaching some camps and different things and some other projects as well. But yeah, we're definitely busy. Like got hurt and Lauren laughs because she's like, you got hurt and you finally had time to just chill. And it was like 1 week after surgery. And I think I walked downstairs one day and I was like, I think we should take over Windrock Bike Park. she's like, what? And I'm like, because we've been talking to Sean about it for probably almost a year.
Okay.
And had a bunch of meetings, but it was trying to figure out, you know, how we can make the numbers work. And I just, with racing and everything, I was so busy. It was hard to sit down and go like, all right, what would this really look like? But since I knew I was going to be out for 4 or 5 months, I was like, I think we can figure this out. Let's figure it out. Okay. So, we've been busy, man. Like really busy. I think the last 2 or 3 months have probably been the most penned months of my whole life. As far as like, we pretty much wake up, at 5:36 every morning and we grind till we go to bed. Like my wife and I both, like we're just in that phase of life, you know, we're establishing new businesses, we're working on new projects. So, in time, you know, if we get it set up right with the right team of people to manage those things, we can be a lot more hands off, but sure. up front, if you want to set it up, there's no other way. Like you got to put in the work to get it going. So, but dude, it, as much work as it is, like it's a absolute dream come true for me. Like it's crazy. I mean, since I could remember at 4 years old when I started riding bikes, like I was building trails in the backyard and whether I was racing motocross or downhill or whatever, like having my own bike park or motocross track or like, I love building trails and I feel like I have a unique eye for it. So the bike park thing is just like being able to go out with that sort of canvas and like create every day is like so much fun. So that's awesome. Having my own bike brand or being partnered with a bike brand, like I've been fortunate, like we said earlier, to work with so many cool brands. So to have something you can build long term now, like with the alignment we have, like dude, epic. The race team, I mean, I basically run the race. I've had a race program for over 5 years now. It's just, you know, we had somebody else's name on it, but I was the one that owned and operated the whole thing. So it's just my name on it now. So not a lot has changed there minus the name. But being able to basically just have kind of full control of what we're doing, the riders, everything, like it's kind of a, I don't want to say low pressure because we definitely want to win and we want to get great results, but, there's kind of a bigger picture there now that is happening, that it just has all these things that I love sort of all tied together, like in this really cool kind of way. So, yeah, man, it's been very busy and a lot of work and we got a lot more work left to do, but, I'm really excited about kind of where the future will go with all of it.
Yeah. Is it called Nurex? Is that what you said?
NeuroCatch.
NeuroCatch. Sorry. Sounds super interesting. And yeah, something's needed. So you can't just clap your dome and tell everyone, no, I'm good. I'm going to drop in for race day.
Like, totally. I know. Yeah. Shine a flashlight in your eye and they're like, yeah, I think you're good.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you kind of give us any insight as to where Windrock will go? Like, can we host a World Cup there, USA? Dude,
I would love to. Yeah, 100%. I mean, we can do whatever we want there. The cool thing about Windrock is it's all on private land. So we have a lot of freedoms that would be very difficult elsewhere, like with, you know, the land company that we have our lease through. So yeah, plan with Windrock in the near term, we've doubled the acreage of the park from like 540 acres to like over, I think we're at around 1100 acres. So like pretty much doubled it exactly. Yeah. We're planning to move the shuttle drop off a little further up the hill. So that all the runs will get longer. It will also access this sort of new zone of land. So tons of plans, you know, over the next few years with the trails. I really want to make Windrock somewhere where like everybody can come ride and enjoy. Right now, it definitely leans towards the more intermediate expert crowd.
Sure.
You know, we don't have like, you know, like we have stuff that a beginner could ride, but it's definitely,
it's still pretty serious.
Yeah. So we really want to build like some real proper, like blue and green flow trails as well. Like, I mean, the trails are like our racetrack, for example, is going to be as gnarly as it's ever been or more. So I want it to be somewhere where like a World Cup athlete can come and train and you could host a World Cup, but like I could also go and ride there with my wife or, you know, our friends that have little kids and stuff. Like I want it to be somewhere where everybody can come ride and enjoy. So that's the plan on the trails. We're building out like a 2,600 square foot bike shop retail space now. That's the cause of most of the stress right now, is trying to get that thing completely built and open in 3 months in time for the Tennessee Nationals. So we'll see. We're 3 weeks away and we're drywalling on Monday. So we're burning the midnight oil. We'll see if we get there. But yeah, new bike shop. We'll have like suspension service center, full workshops, retail space, rental fleet, all that kind of stuff. We want to have like all the amenities at the bike park, whether it's like food or like hangout zones. We want to put in like an asphalt pump track. Like we want to like really make it like the hub to come and hang out and ride kind of for everybody. So Yeah, big plans on that. This year, event-wise, we have the Tennessee National, which is our biggest event of the year. It's also the only one that I'm responsible to run directly. So the first mountain bike race I've ever run is going to be the biggest one of the year, which has really been sweet to figure out quick. But we got a good team, and I'm confident it'll be an awesome event. We have the big mountain enduro race, I think the second round in May, and then we have the downhill southeast race in June, as well as the Go Nuts XC and enduro race. And then we have our race series races and all that. So yeah, I would love to have a World Cup someday. I'm curious how the financials work out, because I know a lot of resorts, there's tourism money that kind of comes in to make that happen. And a lot of, I think just to host a resort, like, and I could be wrong, but from what I've heard, even the amount of rooms that you need to supply to like the UCI and the TV crew and all that, like, it's massive. So a lot of resorts own their own lodging. So giving away rooms like that is pretty easy. We don't have any of that. So if we had to buy hotel rooms for like 100 people, like, you know, for a week would be, so I'm sure Fort Williams the same, you know, we're not the only venue in that situation, but I think we would probably need some help from like Knoxville tourism or something to try to make that financially make sense. But if we could do it like 100%, yes, I'd be all in on having them, and we could have an epic World Cup there. So
Dude, for sure.
we're talking about some other events too that I can't talk about yet, but we'll see if we can pull them off, but big plans.
Dude, killer. Sounds good. That's rad that the shuttle's going higher. So
Yeah, we'll see. I wouldn't say even a ski lift is out of the question in the future.
I was going to say, what about some lift access?
Maybe. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's expensive. Operational costs are expensive. The staff you need to run it is expensive. And right now, honestly, with where we are at, our shuttle truck system, we can move, I think, 30 people per shuttle truck and trailer. And I think that the time to get from the bottom to the top is about 7 minutes, and we have three trucks. So the turnaround time is probably 15 to 20 minutes per truck, and we can move 30 at a time. So I think we can move, you know, essentially 90 people every 20 minutes or so. So it's really efficient. We actually looked at a study on if we did a lift, and unless you had like this insane high speed gondola, we can actually get people to the top of the hill faster with the trucks right now than we can with the lift. But if we were going to go all the way to the top of the hill, then that would obviously change. So we'll see. Right now, plan is just to add more elevation. I mean, the trails are already going to be, you know, around the 4 minute mark plus when we move up to this new zone. Right now, they're, you know,
for you.
Yeah, exactly. So like they're already plenty long enough, but it would be rad to have a lift. So we'll see. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Cool. All right. We'll wind it up with some kind of less serious stuff, but what's a favorite bike that you're not sponsored by anymore? Like if you had to pick one, like from back in the day, what was your favorite one over the course of the career so far?
I mean, I had a really good run on that Trek. So
yeah,
like that thing worked good at the time. Like if you were to tell me to go back and ride it now, I'd be like, that thing's trash compared to what we're on now probably. But I mean, for what it was then, that bike was really fast on the clock and I felt really good on it. I really liked that bike. Honestly, dude, like I feel like every brand I've ridden for, and I'm not just trying to say this to be like politically correct or whatever, but like every brand I've been on, like I've really loved at least one of the bikes I was on. I haven't loved every bike I've been on with every brand, but like with Yeti, like those 303s were awesome. Like I don't feel like I ever had a bike at Yeti I didn't like, but I was also like brand new to mountain biking and I think you could have put me on anything and I would have been stoked. The Treks were good, you know. Specialized, I struggled a little bit with that first year, but by the time I left Specialized, I loved that bike. I jumped on the YT and I was comfortable straight away, had really good results on that bike. Intense took a little bit longer to get there, but the last 2 years, I really liked both of those race bikes we raced. The one this year specifically, which was a bummer because I didn't get to race it. So I don't know, man, like I've liked bikes at all of those places, I guess, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's really hard for me to separate. If you were to ask me like visually, what bike do I geek out on the most and walk out in the garage and stare at, it would be the Crestline I have now.
All right.
That thing, dude, legitimately in person is like a piece of artwork. Like, that thing is sick. So now I'm excited to ride it.
All right. Sweet. Okay. Good answer. All right. If you're cruising YouTube or Instagram or whatever, I don't know how you would have time to do this because you sound so freaking busy, but what are you watching that would surprise us as far as like subject matter? Like last year I got on this kick of watching this dude that goes and mows super overgrown abandoned lots and then makes them super nice. I'm like, yeah. It was just kind of like, oh, I just zone out to that for a half hour. And yeah. So I what would you watch that surprises you?
I think I've seen that. Man, I don't know. I'm trying to think, like, Lauren would laugh at me because I really like watching GoPro footage, like, all the time, whether it's motocross, supercross, or downhill. So I'll literally be in here in the morning, like, lately not because I just have no extra time, but I'll just be sitting and be like, you know, whatever, 7 o'clock in the morning, I'll be drinking my coffee and she'll hear dirt bike sounds coming from the computer and she's like, comes over, she's like, what are you watching? And I'm like, a 2007 race GoPro of Carmichael and Stewart. And
oh, really? Like, some old stuff too.
Yeah. All of it. Like, I can just go down the GoPro motocross downhill rabbit hole all day long. So,
all right.
But yeah, I mean, guitar videos when I'm in my zone of playing guitars. I'm always looking at real estate. So pretty much checking listings like every day. Like I really like real estate. So, but yeah, I don't know. That's probably about it right now. Not time for much.
Okay. Did you, I was looking at Zillow the other day at Oliver Springs and there's that like 1900s house with like another house and like a garage in the back. It looks so cool.
Yep. Have you seen that one? I've seen it. Yep. And, there's another one there. I already went and looked at it, but it's, that would be a project.
Those old ones are pretty rough though, huh?
It's old. Yeah. Even some of it's been remodeled, but we were in there looking at it and I was like, man, and I got lit up by the gnarliest mosquitoes in that yard that I think I've ever run into. I was like, whoa. But I mean, that was back in the summer last year, I think, or whenever, but we're always on the hunt.
Okay. All right. So on that tip, if any, do you miss anything about living in California? And then what are the pros and cons about living in Tennessee? And you can go quick on it. We've been talking for forever. So
yeah, sure. California. I mean, dude, California was home for me. I was born and raised there. I grew up out in the desert though, in like a really small town of like 3,000 people. It's called Morongo Valley. Like, it's in the hills above Palm Springs, between Palm Springs and Yucca Valley. So I think a lot of people are like, oh, you're from California. And I'm like, but not very small desert horse town. You know, you ride your dirt bike from your garage out into the mountains and not ever see anybody. So I miss that. I definitely miss the desert. Like, I love the desert. Mm-hmm. I have some really good friends that still live out there that every time I go home, I go and ride mountain bikes out there and dirt bikes and stuff with them. I mean, dude, California is, it's really hard to beat, obviously, right, with weather, and you can be at the beach or in the mountains or whatever within a day if you want to. But I think for us, like, just the amount of people and the traffic and the hustle and the just so many things about it, it just kind of got to the point where we were spending a lot of time in Montana. We have a house there that we stay at a lot in the summertime and the shoulder seasons. And then we bought a really small place that we stay at right near Wind Rock as kind of a training house, because I wanted to be at Wind Rock training more. And the more we spent time in Montana and Tennessee, it was just, you felt like you breathed a little easier. Like, you were just, the people were awesome. There was a lot less of them. Just felt like there was more like freedom to kind of just like move around and do what you wanted to do. And we would fly back to California and it was just like, whew, I love it. Hectic. And I still love so much about it, but for us, you know, we just got to a point where we really enjoyed sort of the slower pace of life and a little bit more space out here. And so, since we've been here, it's been awesome, man. We love it. I think cons would be, like we just talked about, some of the bugs in the summer, but honestly, not that bad. It's not like Florida. We definitely
Can you deal with the humidity? Like, was that a big adjustment or anything?
No, I don't really have an issue. I mean, I grew up in Palm Springs basically, so it wasn't humid, but I mean, it'd be like 125 degrees. Like, it was hot as hot. I've never had a hard time with the heat. I do pretty good. So yeah, that's fine. And honestly, like, I thought it would be worse here. We might have a week or two a year in the summer where you're like, dude, like, it's humid and it's hot. You're like, this is pretty brutal, but it's not like months at a time. Like, a lot of times you can go to Wind Rock in the summer and like you might be a little hot while you're like putting all your gear on the parking lot in direct sun. But when you start riding and you're going up the shuttle truck, it's like, it's fine. Like I'd rather ride there than in the, you know, Temecula at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, it's been good. I think the things that are, you know, I actually really enjoy the seasons out here. Like it's, I like that there's a fall and a spring and a winter and a summer, and you kind of get the weather changes with all that. We've been working at Windrock a lot and moving a lot of dirt the last few months. So we had a snow that set in for a month or a week.
Dude, I saw people like skiing and snowboarding down the trails.
Dude, usually if it snows here, it melts in like a day, and it hung around for a week and a half, and it rained. And that was irritating for sure, because we were trying to work. So I was like, really be nice if it would stop raining. But honestly, I think it's rained more in California this off season than it has here. Yeah. So yeah, it's good living, dude. We love it. I really enjoy music, and being close to Nashville is like music mecca. And so it's been cool.
Two more pretty important ones. Will you race in shorts this year? Jason really wants you to race in shorts.
Schroeder with the shorts. Dude, I could be convinced. I mean, I felt like I was, you know, I think Sam Hill was like one of the first dudes that really committed to pants for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then when I came in, I was a moto kid. So I never wanted to wear shorts. Like I had to, because that's all I had the option for. And as soon as I had an option to wear pants, I was like, I'm wearing pants. And that was when everybody was wearing shorts. So now everybody's on pants. I think the pants are getting way too tight now. Like some of them, I'm just like, bros, like this is like, I get it. They're fast, but I'm like, they're so tight. But I don't know. Maybe. Why not? I feel like shorts are a little different now. So I rode in pants and a short sleeve shirt for a photo shoot with Thor last year. And I was like, this is kind of cool. And then I put shorts on for a while and I was like, maybe. But the only thing that gets a little weird is like I always wear elbow pads when I wear downhill now. So I'm like, do you want to be the guy in like short sleeve shirt and pads, like racing at a World Cup? Like it's pretty militia. But I don't know, man. Like I'm getting kind of older now. Like I kind of don't care.
Yeah. All right. That's awesome. Okay. So we hear your ex-mechanic Patrick has a deal with you that if you win world champs, you get to dictate his diet for a month. Does that still stand? And if it does, what are you going to make him eat?
I don't know. We were just joking about it. I was chatting with him about a month ago, and we always had bets. Like a lot of my mechanics, we had bets. I used to have bets with Monk Dog because he'd drink a lot of soda, and Patrick, like just trying to get the boys on the health program. Where I'm like, all right, if I win, like you got to have a salad with dinner every night, or you got to like cut back to like one Coke a day, not three. Like. Yeah. My mechanic James right now, like he's pretty fit, but he drinks a lot of Coke, and so we've got him on the sparkly waters now, and so we're always working. We're just, you know, we're trying to be a little better every day. So I don't know what the bet would be. I have to figure out what old Patrick is eating now, but I kind of lean heavier towards like meat now, like meat and fruit and stuff. So
yeah.
I'd probably, you know, I wouldn't be trying to make him eat a salad with dinner every night and be like, all right, you're gonna have a steak for dinner every night or something like that.
Nice. That's awesome. Thanks so much. Appreciate you being on, and hope you keep healing up, and stoked to see how the team goes and the new bike goes. So
thanks, brother. Appreciate it.
A big shout out goes to Maxxis Tires, Jensen USA, and Fox Shocks for supporting the Inside Line. Welcome, mountain bikers.